Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. That was the Michael Slater Slate Show for Political Perspectives this morning. Next, coming right up, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre at 10:15. Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with your host Dennis Bernstein at 11 o'clock. It's the KBOO Bike Show. Stay tuned for that. Okay, let's hear one announcement, and then we'll get to Air Cascadia.
Interested in solar power? In saving the planet and money on your electricity bill? In creating millions of good jobs? Celebrate the just-completed solar power electricity installation at the Musicians Union Hall on Sunday, August 17th, from 3 to 7 p.m. You'll have a chance to see the rooftop solar unit. Learn about how you can do it on your home or business. There will be food, children's games, displays, and lots of music from the likes of Dave Rovix. Again, that's Sunday, August 17th, from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Musicians Union Hall, 320 Northeast 20th in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Again,
sun is on my face, solar panels in place, catching solar rays.
Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, August 6th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Trying to get to Richard Silverstein, the security expert on the line, not able to round him up at the moment, so we'll just forge along ahead and talk about some of the other matters today. It's a top of the news, of course, is Glenn Greenwald's Edward Snowden revelations on cache weapons and surveillance. As no one is surprised to learn, the U.S. is a key party to every Israeli attack. The U.S. government, as we know, has for many, many years lavished enormous, overwhelming aid on Israel, providing cash, weapons, surveillance technologies, drones. Many people in Gaza report that when they walk outside and there are no drones overhead, they know that there is, in fact, a ceasefire that is underway. The aid that the U.S. has given to Israel plays a crucial role in all of these attacks. You would think that if a people bully their way into a neighborhood, that they would make every effort possible to get along with people who already live there. But this is not what we've seen over the years. And now, of course, the focal point of animosity is targeted on Gaza. The lies that come out of the machine, the Frank Luntz machine, of course, are stunning, and they are repeated in the echo chamber that the mainstream media is. The relationship, though, between the U.S. and Israel has, on at least one occasion, entailed the covert payment. That's covert, of a large amount of cash to Israeli operatives. Beyond their own surveillance programs, the American and British surveillance agencies rely on U.S.-supported Arab regimes, including the Jordanian monarchy, even the Palestinian Authority, security forces to provide vital spying services regarding Palestinian targets. We'll talk a little bit more about that. There are also new revelations about the collection of data on people all across the world, U.S. citizens as well as foreign nationals. And again, thanks, Edward Snowden. If it were not for you, we would be experiencing the results, the repercussions of these practices, and not talking about them. We no doubt will experience these. Anybody attempting to board a plane who has ever said anything untoward or ever been arrested will find themselves very likely detained. So we do know that the feelers are out there, but now we're able to talk about the factual basis for some of the actions that have been directed at us. But closer to home, there have been many, many instances in recent years where the U.S., where the Portland police have overstepped the boundaries and gone rather hard on the weakest among us, the homeless, people who have mental health issues, people who are generally defenseless. They have come, they've found themselves in the crosshairs more often than the rest of us. Recently, there has been an incident where a chap who was had mental issues was who was pulled over and suffered the consequences. Our own KBOO's own Joanne Bowman, or Joanne Hardesty, he says that she doubts the official version of events. She does not believe that Chap Otis refused officers' request to put his hands on his head, or that he pulled a gun on the police and that he shot first. Joanne says, and other advocates for greater civilian oversight of law enforcement, and say they don't trust officers or, for that matter, prosecutors. Joanne herself, a former state representative, is joining today reporters Casey Parks and Anna Griffin for a live chat today that's going on right now, actually, at 10 a.m., to talk about her arguments for reform, how we're going to, every avenue seems to have been explored in the case of the Portland police, even to the extent that the feds have become concerned. And every time something like this sort happens, we're told that the police have received more sensitivity training, and yet we still see these things happening. In any case, Joanne will answer says that she'll answer questions in the comment section, so you can get involved with that. That's being sponsored, I believe, by the Oregonian, of all places, following that story. And the Federal Department of Agriculture grain inspectors are refusing to walk past picket lines and into a grain terminal in Vancouver, Washington. This comes as, of course, we know harvest is approaching, and shortly after, state grain inspectors from the Washington State Department of Agriculture stopped entering the United Grain Terminal, citing safety concerns because of picketing longshoremen. What on earth safety concerns they might possibly have, like trip over an abandoned sign on the ground. In any case, the Capitol Press, of Oregon's ag newspaper, reports that federal inspectors continue to work at the Columbia Grain Facility in Portland, where locked out longshoremen are also picketing. There's not a great deal other than Joanne Bowman's Q&A and some labor issues. But under the surface, as we all know, activists are still working hard in Portland on a number of issues. But let's not forget that this is a place where we plant our feet, and that the environment, as always, is under constant threat. We are moving further afield, though, and catching up with Chris Hedges. Meet Hannibal, basically, is what Chris would like us to do. The Hannibal Directive is easily confused with the other two famous Hannibals, Lecter and the chap with the elephants and the Alps. This Hannibal Directive, however, is a secret procedure that is invoked when an Israeli Defense Forces soldier is captured by enemy forces. The directive is portrayed by the Israeli media and officials in one manner, but implemented on the ground in quite a different fashion. The official version is that Hannibal allows Israeli forces to take enhanced measures, and we all know what enhanced means these days, to prevent the capture of its soldiers, including endangering the lives of those engaged in the capture by firing at a getaway vehicle. Basically, it is the Hannibal directive. It gives the Israeli Defense Forces soldiers free rein to fire indiscriminately at civilians, anybody, basically. And let's not forget, too, if you live in Gaza and you are under constant attack, anybody could be considered a militant, and why not? Anybody would take a stand on behalf of their home. Who wouldn't defend their home? A small child, anybody who has children knows that they'll fight like tigers to keep you out of their rooms. It doesn't come as a surprise that pretty much anybody there in beleaguered Gaza would consider themselves militants, or in, for that matter, be considered by the rest of the world. It is perfectly moral and indeed legal if, as they claim, Israelis have a right to protect themselves, and surely indeed others do too. Though, going up against, the, as we mentioned before in the program, the a military that is funded, in fact, is an extension of the U.S. military. That alone, that in and of itself, gives asymmetrical warfare a whole new shine. In Britain, Baroness Saida Warsi, who had been the first Muslim to serve in the U.K. cabinet, she has resigned. She quit Tuesday morning with a letter to Prime Minister David Cameron stating that she found the administration's approach and language during Israel's recent operations in Gaza morally indefensible. Morsi announced her departure, saying, "With deep regret, I have this morning written to the Prime Minister to tender my resignation." More in Britain, UK activists shut down an Israeli drone factory for nearly a month. Israel now has been bombarding Gaza from land, sea, and air, and the death count now must be up over 2,000 Palestinians lost their lives. Fancy that. Imagine if the tables were turned and it were Israelis, that many Israelis who had been murdered. And I don't use that term lightly. I'm not trying to be melodramatic. It is murder when families in their homes are wiped out. And how is this accomplished? Well, thanks for asking. Drones. Drones would be the short answer. The activists in Britain say that, to their collective shame, the UK government has not only failed to take action to pressure Israel to stop the massacre, but it has refused to take steps to end the material support it provides Israel's brutal regime of apartheid and colonialism. When governments support crimes against humanity, grassroots movements indeed do take action, as we see in Britain. And the group of activists from the London Palestine Action Network chained the doors shut of an Israeli weapons factory based near Birmingham and are occupying the roof as part of a boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and in response to calls for action from Palestinian movements. They are demanding the permanent closure of the factory. Drones, of course, are a key part of the Israeli military arsenal, allowing the factory to export drone components and other arms to Israel. The UK government, they say, is providing direct and material support to the for the massacres to continue. That the more on that, Earth First has it all for you if you wish to follow up on that. More from Chris Hedges on the same topic. There is a ceasefire right now, and one of the things that the ceasefire allows is people to walk through what were formerly their streets and neighborhoods and assess the damage. People who had, picture that, coming home to your apartment or your house, whatever, and finding it flattened. The ceasefire allows people, yeah, indeed, to walk through, but there's very little left. Let's not forget there's no their main power generator, their main power plant is gone. They have no drinking water other than what's brought in. And let's not forget, the whole reason for this is the blockade. And you can't just bring things into Gaza. It's not that easy. You would think that in any other place in the world that there would be calls for, there's been such terrible, terrible disaster, so let's have people send blankets and water and this and that, make contributions. But no, that's not happening. Why? Because the blockade is still in place. You can't get things into Gaza. You cannot get medical supplies. What about, you cannot get drinking water. People can't even have food. Or they can have Coca-Cola, excuse me. Yes, they're allowed to drink Coca-Cola, of course. But no cement, of course. And people instead just wander through the rubble of what they used to live in. And finally, this, back in the Western Hemisphere, the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, sent a 29-year-old Costa Rican man with no intelligence training to recruit young Cubans to anti-government activism under the guise of an HIV prevention workshop. This has got to be the worst idea